So, the last movie in our trio.
Before we go on this, I'm gonna have to have a beer before. Another beer.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
Megan Levy.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight to discuss our latest trio of movies is Shane Settner.
Yo.
And Brian Hartman.
That's me.
Ambulators!
Lace up!
So, our previous trio took place shortly after the new year. So, what my thinking was, let's just knock out a bunch of movies that played some kind of role in the cinematic landscape of the previous year. And I gave everyone the choice between, because again, I am the dictator, benevolent dictator, between wide release movies and indie movies and foreign movies. And I feel like I stacked the deck against wide release movies, namely Split and The Great Wall and Megan Levy, but it won in a runaway.
Trump's America, brother.
Just too smart for my own good. I feel like every one of those foreign movies would have been sensational.
Are you a poor who made a movie? Don't want to watch.
Yeah, you'd prefer something from the genius of M. Night Shyamalan. Whatever. I mean, these I don't think were bad movies by any means necessarily. These three wide
release
movies. That's
not true.
We're going to talk about it. I don't necessarily think they were very good. I think there is a lower average on all three of them. Maybe not our lowest average. Like the Denzel Washington trio was kind of surprisingly subpar. These were expected to be subpar, and if any elevated themselves, then that's just a pleasant surprise. And let's find out if they did. Our first movie of the three that we talked about is M. Night Shyamalan's Split, which at this point was released more or less a year ago and is one of the biggest hits of his career. Like, this guy is fully back in the good graces of Hollywood now. He's best known for his use of the twist, but in Split, the big twist is that a director who's made some of the worst films of the 21st century has reemerged as a bankable director.
What a twist!
Just 3 years earlier, I remember being in theaters when his name would come up on previews that he was attached to, and people would laugh. But that's over. Yeah, he's back at it. He had a moderate success in 2016 with The Visit, which was about like a found footage, your grandparents are coming to eat you movie. I don't know. I haven't seen it. And now Split. I mean, he's reignited a franchise. He's made a shit ton of money for the studio and for himself, presumably.
We have an M. Night Shyamalan universe.
Wait, this is a franchise?
We'll talk about it. Okay. Spoilers for all three of these movies. If you want to find out if the Chinese defeated the lizard monsters or not, you know, go watch that movie first, The Great Wall, and then return to this podcast, because we're going to say whether or not, spoiler, that they do. The monsters have taken over the world, and we're just podcasting under their benevolent shadow, much like the Moody Comedy Club operates in my benevolent shadow.
Yeah.
Series of shadows.
Yeah, everyone knew Megan Levy was a documentary, but not as many people knew The Great Wall.
Yes. So Split stars James McAvoy as a guy with multiple personalities, one of whom takes control and has him kidnap three teenage girls. Not so much a fright fest like The Sixth Sense or Signs with like the fingers, the alien fingers, or the monster in the village sneaking up behind the blind woman. It's just like a creep show. It's an ick fest instead of a fright fest. It gets its tension not from jump scares, but from a grown man acting like a child around increasingly naked women. We'll talk about whether the themes of Split, we'll talk about that shortly. But from like an entertainment standpoint, as far as keeping you intrigued and enthralled, how did Split work for you guys?
I might end up liking this better than both of you, I get the feeling. I thought it was pretty good two-thirds of a movie that had a pretty serious leering problem.
Yes.
And then kind of just a complete fucked. The third act was just not good. It jumped the rails. Jumped the shark.
Like the transition from second act to third act does take place in a subway car, so I think you're on track with rails.
Yeah. So tying into the larger M. Night Shyamalan universe was a cheap
gimmick. Who gives a shit? Yes. Who gives a shit?
It was more interesting before the guy became a supervillain.
I'll agree with that. Like, when you got notes on here talking about the Beast and all that sort of stuff, I was much more interested in the perspective of the psychologist and, like, people with multiple personalities or whatever he's got going on, being like something we just don't understand but is actually really advanced or something along those lines. Whatever they were talking about, that was actually interesting compared to an indestructible man.
Sure. And like that had like a vague sheen of actual science and psychology, even though, I mean, I didn't like really dig deep into dissociative identity disorder, but it is something that people have a pretty good handle on. The way that James McAvoy's character describes it is that everyone of his personalities is sitting in a circle on folding chairs in his brain, and the light shines on one of them at a time, and that's just kind of...
I think that's kind of something that the psychologist developed and taught them. So,
sure.
But that was the good part, and that's kind of the point. Like, all of that was kind of believable. Like, okay, where's the psychology, and where's the... Okay, we're jumping, you know, getting a little into fiction here.
And that's all well and good. Like, yeah. I'm not holding that against the movie. It's not the movie's responsibility to accurately portray any...
Right, yeah, and that's what I'm saying, like, where you don't know the difference, and that was good. At the end, like, didn't have to give the guy actual superpowers. All you had to do is tease it enough to whether or not he was... how effective he was. Like, he didn't have to... why did he have to climb the walls? Like, if you'd have left that out, like, sure, that particular superpower right there, like, I'll even take NBA, I shouldn't survive a shotgun blast, but maybe something deflects and he's fucked up. But there are certain people who, I think it's even a genetic thing, who get like berserker type genetic history where they get into violent situations and adrenaline pumps up and they survive because of that.
That's just like the mom picking the car off her kid. Is that what you're talking about?
I think so, kind of. Right. So he gets super amounts of adrenaline. Give me something. Maybe he doesn't, if you do it, he doesn't take a straight shotgun blast, but he gets hurt. It's unclear. Maybe he bends the bar a little, or did he bend the bar? That's a more interesting movie than all of a sudden at the end he's magic.
Yeah, I would wholly co-sign on to that. And we mentioned the Shyamalan verse, Jesus Christ, and this movie...
Can you say that word again for me?
Shyamalan verse.
That was fun.
Okay, yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. You know what I did tonight during basketball?
You Shyamalan'd it?
I Shyamalan'd it. I teaching a kid zone defense. I was like, stay in your spot. This is your spot. This spot belongs to Will. And I was like, all right, how about call it Will Land? He's like, that's a dumb name. I'm like, Willerton? Will, like, let me decide on Will City.
It's better than saying Will's a dumb name. That was really...
Yeah, that would have been Brian's response.
I'm sure Shane considered it, and yes, to his credit.
Yeah, I did not yell at him at that point. But he still left Will City undefended.
He's not connected to his homeland.
He is not.
He's a transient individual.
Yes, he is.
So the Shyamalan verse. In forcing Split into this extended Unbreakable sequel, and what will likely be future movies after that, there's no ending to Split, really, because this is so important, because everyone is clamoring for an Unbreakable sequel. The Beast has to get away, and nothing is really resolved. So I don't know how you guys feel about Unbreakable strongly.
It was fine.
It's a movie that exists in the world.
I think I've seen it.
I like it. I think it's arguably his best movie, M. Night Shyamalan's. But it's just so dumb. It's so dumb. It's just such a horrible idea. Like, who is asking for this kind of thing?
Do you think...
Like, this movie does get credit for being at least marketed as an original idea. It's not like there haven't been multiple identity personality disorder movies before. I'm thinking specifically of like Identity with John Cusack. It's just like a high degree of difficulty for an actor. Great. We're having a good time. It's a simple horror movie made by a studio, Blumhouse, that like keeps an ironclad fist on the financials. and it lets the director more or less run wild as long as he's sticking within those parameters. And like, that's all well and good, but then tacking the extra Unbreakable sequel onto it totally gives the lie to all that, and now we can't, it's just one less movie that contains an original idea. It has to be, again, folded into an expanding franchise.
Do you think this is because of those petitions Obama started? Like, someone wrote in, we got 50,000 votes for an Unbreakable sequel, and they're Obama's sending, like, well, I guess.
But they're asking the White House for those? They're not asking,
Obama,
like...
Sure, Obama made the rules, but he didn't make them tight enough. Bomb house?
Here we are. I mean,
Obama house? Obama house?
Shit.
Damn you, change.gov.
Holy shit. I think we have figured out how the Democrats have funded all of their elections over the last 3 or 4 years. Blumhouse is an extremely successful company. I think when Get Out wins the Best Picture Oscar, that being a Blumhouse production, Obama's going to walk out and accept it.
Take off his lizard mask. He's a lizard.
And then he's going to like stick his tongue out like Reptile from Mortal Kombat 2 and just snatch the head off the presenter, who will probably be like Clint Eastwood or something.
And then he'll run for his third term and take all our guns away.
But he won't put his mask on with the tongue.
He'll like...
With the lizard head, lizard tongue. Yes.
Getting guns. That's what the tongue's for.
Extended. This is the extended secret universe sequel to the Obama administration. Which, you know, I would watch that. I would watch that before, like Mr. Glass or whatever. I don't know. Maybe that'll be fine. Who knows? Shyamalan, he has his well-known weaknesses. If anyone's seen his garbage late 2000s, early 2010 movies that are just abominable disasters and abortions and just who could have thought any of what is on screen is a good idea.
I feel like you're setting a record for the most like 5+ syllable words every time you say
thank you so much. Shyamalan verse. I mean, I'm even making them up.
And every time you say Shyamalan, I think you say it a little bit different, which is like the highlight of this podcast so far for me.
All right, fantastic. We aim to please.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have those weaknesses. I don't think the dialogue is so awful. I don't think the premise is so awful here, which is, you know, like the problem with things like The Happening and The Last Airbender. But he is turning over a new ugly card in his deck with what I thought is like the exploitative nature of Split, where one of the personalities happens to be fastidious. So when one of the teenage girls gets dirt on their sweater or whatever, they have to take their sweater off, and oh my gosh, they're running around in their bra now. And I like that kind of sexual, semi-gross titillation, a long and proud tradition in horror movies, but not something that M. Night Shyamalan has previously done in his movies. Like, Jaden Smith isn't running around without his shirt on in After Earth.
And even with that, if you're showing me people who are supposed to be adults, like, it's a different story even, but God, man, just turn on the...
For all intents and purposes, they're like 16 years.
And like, it's just... And I know the actresses are the actresses' age. I get that the actresses aren't actually those people in the script. Just like James McAvoy is really the beast.
I mean, if a movie is working, you're supposed to buy the characters.
And it was working. And then all of a sudden they're like, all right, you're half-naked teenagers. Weird.
Yeah, that was uncomfortable. That was very uncomfortable to watch.
Yes. I would put that at Blumhouse's feet. Like, you know how maybe you could juice your box office? We don't want to give you more money, but how much money does it cost to tell Anya Taylor-Joy to take her shirt off? Gross. I think it's gross. And I think combined with its worldview, in which the heroine is explicitly allowed to live because she's encountered the trauma of her uncle molesting and raping her for, let's call it, 10 years.
That was also very uncomfortable to find out about.
Very uncomfortable and completely unnecessary. She's with her uncle because her parents are dead. That's a reasonable amount of trauma for a person.
Yeah, or like she accidentally shoots her dad in the woods or something like that. Like, right.
And that is right up M. Night Shyamalan's avenue. Like that's that is the kind of thing he does, where with like lost parents or lost husbands, or like in The Sixth Sense, like in Signs. The sexual violence stuff is another part that's just out of his realm, and combined with the teenage toplessness, the movie is gross. The movie is gross and sweaty, and I'm sure it made a lot of disgusting egg avatars on Twitter super happy when they saw it. But for fuck's sake, I just wholly reject the worldview that like suffering makes you a better person.
You can learn from
having bad experiences. Great, yeah, take whatever lessons you can from them. But one lesson might be, I would have, you know, not preferred this awful thing to have happened to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, and then people are gonna.
And it also certainly doesn't make someone that hasn't gone through trauma less than, which. You know, that's the beast's perspective. That's the villain's perspective. But because this is an ellipsis of a movie, and because the villain gets away, it ratifies his worldview. True. He's the god of the movie. He gets to make the rules. And the rules in this movie are, if you've lived a happy life, you can go fuck yourself because you're not worthy to live in my new world. But if you've had a horrible life, it sure is good that that thing happened to you, because now you get to continue to live. So, I don't know. Maybe Mr. Glass totally throws that into relief. I don't know. Maybe when Bruce Willis is, like, punching the beast's face into the dirt, everything will be made right in the world. But Split is Split, and Mr. Glass is Mr. Glass. This is one movie, not a part of a continuum. And this one movie has a fucking disgusting worldview, I think.
Can I give it a compliment?
Sure.
A little different word we're talking about here. Shyamalan, how do you say it?
Shyamalan?
Shyamalan?
I just keep saying it over and over again.
If you think about it and you're giving time to prepare, like we just had, it's Shyamalan. But in like the middle of a sentence.
Shyamalan?
Shyamalan or Shyamalan. Yeah, Shyamalan. You're trying to like cut a syllable out of it.
I think it was Shyamalan.
I don't know. I don't like him.
Oh, well, all right. Well, I think he does have – I don't know if you pay because you don't care about visuals at all in any movies.
I wouldn't go nuts.
I think he has some really good shots in this movie. He does a really good job with the space that they're in, the claustrophobic.
Yeah, like James McAvoy climbing the wall is a cool shot, as unnecessary as it might be.
Yes, it's a dumb plot. Good shot. A lot of just using the long, narrow hallways and – just making you feel trapped, I guess, kind of
yes.
As a viewer.
Very small in keeping with the restrictive budget, and he makes the most of it.
He does, and it looks great. When I started watching, didn't realize it was a Shyamalan movie, and I was like, wow, this director knows what they're doing.
And then a Indian man or a man of Indian descent showed up on screen and acted. Like, poorly. He'd never been in a movie before.
Still better than Tarantino.
I don't know that that's
but
true.
Not good. That was not good.
Why? Why does he do that?
I don't know.
I don't even remember this part.
I don't know. He's like, the therapist is making fun of him for eating hot dogs or something. I don't know. I watched it a long time ago. It just happened to be
in the top review hopper guy or something. I don't know.
Directors that feel the need to put themselves in their movies.
I was listening to a podcast about Lady Bird with Greta Gerwig.
Sure.
And she's like, yeah, I didn't want to direct myself in a scene. That's just stupid.
Yes.
Because it would have ruined the whole movie.
M. Night Shyamalan should listen to that interview and take a lesson. Because Lady Bird is better than any movie that he's ever had anything to do with.
Wow.
Anything else on Split before we move on?
I'll give it a B-.
Great.
I gave it a D-, because I found it offensive.
I don't know what I meant. Like C-, maybe? I don't know. Because some of it was okay, but I couldn't recommend it to anybody. There's your
I think I would I'd still kind of recommend it. Someone would be like, hey, you want to watch 2/3 of a good movie?
Lane did write a review on MediaMovie.club in his usual highly skilled fashion, and he disagreed pretty strenuously than my take. He did not think that the movie was endorsing the Beast's worldview. And I think that's reasonable. I think you have to really trust that the movie is deeper than I think it is capable of being. He quoted a verbose review that did exactly that, and I did just didn't quite buy it. I don't think people are thinking that hard about this movie. And I do also think that there's a binary, alive or dead. Who's alive and who's dead at the end of the movie, and who killed them or who let them live? Like, the movie is making decisions in that regard. And
the only person who deserves that was a psychologist. Yeah. How do you not exit the building? Get out of there. Get out! Call police! Go!
That was very confusing.
Scram!
That would have cost another $10,000, and it just was not allowed. Iron-fisted. So, The Great Wall is our next movie. So, this is like the Chinese equivalent of Independence Day, in my mind. Zhang Yimou is the director, and in The Great Wall, he praises the ingenuity and the elegance and the grit of his home country against an otherworldly pack of dinosaur monsters. This is the same guy who choreographed China's famous opening ceremony at the Beijing Olympics. And in The Great Wall, he's turning his eye towards spectacle for the dynastic, medieval, glorious, top-of-the-world China that was several gaps in the civilization tech tree above whatever was going on in medieval Europe at the time. There are synchronized drums here, just like in that opening ceremony, but here it's like a military messaging system instead of a demonstration of national unity, although Yimou is very much thinking about how awesome China is in its depiction of this like medieval warfare society. Generated a fair amount of controversy for Matt Damon's presence in it. I think like the early trailers framed him as the person who's going to make the difference in this war when he is like a crusader coming in to rescue the Chinese.
I'm really glad that a bunch of liberal white folks got offended on the behalf of Chinese folks who made this movie.
And then they were wrong. Not only were they presumptuous with their notions of offense taken, but they're also wrong because he comes there as a disenchanted mercenary and he leaves like a devoted and awestruck warrior before the might of dynastic China.
Yeah, so my fellow liberals, please stop being such easily offended on behalf of other people.
I was just going to say it would be more like ignorant. They're making assumptions. It's not that they're...
Right, because...
Speaking before they know.
Yeah, minorities just don't know when they're going to be offended and they need us to step in.
It's not like those kind of movies don't exist.
They do.
One of the writers of The Great Wall, of which there are six, and they're all Americans. One of them is Ed Zwick, who wrote maybe one of the more egregious examples of the white savior narrative in The Last Samurai, a movie that I really admire, but is deeply, deeply problematic in the terms that the aforementioned liberals would prefer. So it's not like Zwick hasn't specifically himself done this kind of thing before, but this is a movie about China, I think primarily for the Chinese. It was released in China 2 months before it was released in the US, and it made most of its money there. This is a very successful movie. It closed in on $300 million. But despite all that, it does still star Matt Damon as the audience surrogate instead of like the clumsy Chinese novice soldier who is like usually the audience surrogate for these kind of things. So I guess the first question about The Great Wall is that is that just the way it is at the moment, that you have to have the American movie star to sell this movie, or could Damon have taken more of a backseat than the obvious lead that he was?
I think classifying Damon as an American movie star is limiting. He's a world.
Sure, yeah, he's a global movie star. Yeah.
So, and there are so few global movie stars who are non-native English speakers.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I don't think it has anything to do necessarily with him being a white American. It's rather he's Matt Damon.
I think in terms of like writing and directing, you can have Matt Damon's face be on the cover and then he sort of doesn't need to be the star of the movie, though.
You mean like Steven Seagal in that one movie where he falls out of the plane pretty quickly?
He falls out of the plane.
Sure.
What?
Pretty quickly.
Okay. Like right earlier. There it is. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, like just as Shyamalan versus Shyamalan all over again. Yeah. We're learning how to talk in the Munich Movie Club podcast as
before our statisticians hit us up on Facebook. The Great Wall is the 29th highest grossing film of all time in China.
I mean, Hollywood really took off in like a period when America was asserting itself around the world, and we very much wanted to export our values, and the Chinese movie market is coming online in a period of time when China wants to do very much the same thing. Like, I don't think French movies are necessarily obsessed with exporting French values or Scandinavian, like movies from Scandinavian countries. They feature Scandinavian people who are immersed in that kind of environment, but they're not trying to convince the rest of the world that Scandinavia is awesome necessarily. I think the more movies like The Great Wall we get with or without global movie stars, but that very much are supposed to be these crowd-pleasing, giant spectacle, nine-figure budgets, we'll see more of Chinese patriotic salesmanship. So if you're watching The Great Wall and you've never heard of China before, like, what's the takeaway?
China's awesome. They're organized. They have heart. They're not greedy.
That's
true. They have technology.
Common cause, all paddling in the same direction, willing to give their lives up.
Terrible at making hot air balloons. Just absolutely yes. Terrible.
More of a ground-based civilization.
That was my big takeaway from the whole movie. Don't fly in a Chinese hot air balloon.
Unless Matt Damon is in there with you, and then the plot armor will keep your balloon up for as long as it needs to stay in the air. So pick a division. If you're guarding the Great Wall against the Tao Te, which is the name for the dinosaur monsters with their eyes and their shoulders. Do you want to be the bears with their pretty cool weapons and their spike shields, or like the tigers that are inflicting the great destruction with their siege equipment, but it's probably very hot inside the wall. The eagles, they're just firing arrows, pretty straightforward. But then there's the cranes, who I think occupy like the biggest real estate as far as selling the movie, cranes being the bungee soldiers that seem ineffective at best, but at least die in really cool ways.
Really cool.
I think probably the eagle is the way to go.
I agree. Eagle or tiger.
Just sit back and fire arrows.
No, but then you're on top of the wall. I want to be the person who opens up the wall with a giant saw blade.
Sure.
I want to be the guy that says, open the wall. Right?
Yeah. Yes, those are the tigers.
So, yeah, I'm in the wall.
It seems like they kind of kept that in reserve when they could have broken up the scissors at any point during that initial battle. But they kind of had to have something in reserve for the second big battle.
You're safest in that position.
Definitely.
But your
job is probably the shittiest. You're like pushing those balls into the catapults.
Yeah. But you're also not getting eaten by aliens.
True, but they get all the glory.
The monster did seem, the impression I was given, to give the scissors some credibility here,
sure,
is that the monster learns like every single time something new. So they didn't want to like give it all away. I don't know if I just made that up, but it seemed to be right.
Reasonable. They seem pretty intelligent.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see one of the big muscle bound Tao Te's in action. That was kind of disappointing. I feel like a group of them could have like barged through the wall themselves, no problem. And for what it's worth, like we don't spend a lot of time at the wall. Like half of the movie is there, and then half of the movie is inside the city. Kind of disappointing, I don't know, but there has to be some kind of escalation. Just like in Game of Thrones, the threat can't stay behind the wall forever.
Yeah.
So I get it, but
the city part was pretty dumb.
I agree. It sure seemed like millions of people died in this movie. Because you got to think these rampaging monsters ate everyone.
Yeah.
Right. It has the whole Mulan aspect going to it. If you start counting, you got to start counting 10,000 at a time.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of the Black Plague sweeping through China.
I mean,
there are just no more people live in ancient Beijing anymore for a period of time. So the thing that makes the difference for the humans, for the Chinese, is that they have a magnet they specifically being Matt Damon. I guess he does save the day by bringing the magnet with him. It just makes the dinosaurs docile, and then they're able to dope one up with a magnet and send it back to its mom laden with bombs.
I feel like ICP has been justified in their song when they're like, magnets, how the fuck do they work?
Clearly,
obviously magical.
Well, they are famously not docile. They are aggressive,
right? So that's why,
and they don't
so,
know how magnets work. Yes, so I think
they're probably avoiding
I think
them.
They're the true lizard man. Yeah. They and Obama will have something in common once he whips his mask off at the Oscars.
We should go to a Juggalo convention and wear magnets, see what happens.
Just everyone calms down.
Yeah.
Everyone's totally fine with Tila Tequila on stage.
And they're like,
it's like, yeah, this is fine. I don't care.
Like, oh,
whatever.
Well,
that's all this shit on my face.
Jerry, I was going to stick around to watch this show, but I'm going to go back and check on my 401k.
Jerry, I think every Juggalo is named Todd or, I don't know, something like staccato in German.
Corey?
Like Kurt.
Kurt.
Something, yeah.
Corey. Corey. Corey's a good one.
Maybe like
Corey
two,
with an E.
Two names.
Yeah.
But then we're just going into straight up like
hey, Todd,
like
Corey.
Hillbilly stereotypes.
Todd, Corey,
Billy
you going
Joe.
To the ICP concert tonight? Hell yeah, because I don't have a job.
Yeah, you shouldn't have worn the makeup to it in the interview. I feel like that was a terrible decision.
Yeah, it was just for the Flying J.
Don't be a Juggalo 100% of your life. Be a Juggalo like 60% of your life.
Yeah, especially if you're new 100%.
Compartmentalize. Keep your world separate.
Yeah.
Keep your world
Do you
separate.
Think
keep your fago in this circle and your income in another circle.
If the magnetism works.
Did you say your fago?
Like fago,
the,
yes.
Yeah.
They drink like the fago. Drink?
They drink fago.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is fago still a thing?
For Juggalo.
Imagine if we
it's
sent
their communion wine.
Imagine,
sorry, Shane, go ahead.
Imagine if we sent them to the moon, but there's no magnetic field. Would they be hyper aggressive? Like really aggressive?
Yeah, they would really not want to see
like,
Tila
what would
Tequila
they do
there.
There. Yeah. Wait, they don't like Tila Tequila?
Wait, hold on. The new question
so,
is, John, how do you know so much about this?
I was just about to explain. So, on the AV Club in their. In their pre-purge, like 2012 purge, when it was still like the original AV Club group there. One of them happened to be a guy who just was into a lot of weird shit. And one of the things that he was into was like documenting the gathering of the Juggalos every year. And he would write a very long report on the AV Club about what happened there every year. And one year, Tila Tequila showed up on stage to entertain, and things got ugly at the Gathering of the Juggalos, believe it or not.
I don't know who
stage. She's no, she's nothing. She's a reality TV star.
Slash porn actress.
I didn't know that, but I believe it.
Trump supporter.
She's not a good person.
Terrible person.
How much campaign finance money did
she
get from
Trump? Great question. I feel like her and Stormy Daniels would have got along great. Neither one of them would have done well at a Juggalo gathering. But yes, she shouldn't have agreed to this in the first place, but the Juggalos shouldn't also have thrown bagel bottles full of shit at her, I imagine. I don't know. I don't think of that.
She shouldn't. Have agreed to the Trump thing or to the
people
to the Juggalo
well obviously
thing.
But the Juggalos also I feel like it's just been downhill for Tila Tequila for the last like 4 or 5 years. Like I guess she bet on the right horse technically, but like what does that get you?
I think that was gone from the Great Wall too.
The point is, if you know a Juggalo, bring a magnet to them. And then maybe if it works, you can strap a bunch of explosives to them and send them to the Gathering of the Juggalos, where they will then blow up the insane clown.
Don't
posse.
Let them go to the moon because it'll be.
I assume this is how the Juggalos feed the insane clown posse. Also, is they drink? They eat a lot of. I don't know. Why don't I think Triscuits first?
I don't know.
Eat a lot of Cheetos, but yeah. Not Cheetos.
Check
like
this out.
The Fago equivalent of Cheetos, and then barf them all up into to whatever the Juggalos' names are into Shaggy J's mouth.
Something like that.
Sure.
I don't know if that's accurate.
He has really soft teeth.
Yeah. What? Who wins in a fight? A Juggalo on the moon versus the Beast?
On the moon?
Are
they fighting on the moon?
Yeah, they're fighting on the moon.
Well, the Beast can probably breathe moon air because...
M. Night Shyamalan's like, no, he has a 25th personality, and that one's a spaceman.
Yeah, it's Neil Armstrong. If Neil Armstrong could breathe on the moon, like, so Neil Armstrong, basically.
Why not?
Yeah, that's why he was sent there in the first place.
Did Neil Armstrong punch that guy in the face once? That was
awesome. Was Buzz Aldrin. And also, strangely enough, not a fan of Tila Tequila. So, The Great Wall is a flimsy movie once you get past all the Chinese patriotism stuff. I don't know. It's an interesting trend in movies going forward. I mean, I can't be offended by it. We've been telling the whole fucking world how awesome America is for decades. So, whatever. Maybe it's time for the rest of the world to learn about how awesome another country is through all of the dinosaur monsters they kill.
But if you're going to do a stupid movie like that, Patriot's awesome.
Sure. I guess.
This is not awesome.
Shane's just trying to get you riled up.
This is a totally fine movie that I enjoyed and was reasonably impressed by the imagination of.
I told you, I said, I'm going to go finish this and the good TV downstairs.
Sure.
Like, at least it's probably enjoyable. It looked like shit, too.
I don't agree with that at all. I think it looks very good.
It looks average.
I think Zhang Yimou, whose previous credits include things like Hero and House of Flying Daggers, which I haven't seen, he knows what a movie is supposed to look like, no question. Yeah. He has a flair for the dramatic and the operatic.
That's so disappointing.
Okay.
Brian, sorry, we talked over you.
I was going to say, the stuff with the wall was creative. I'm with John on that. And I, like, when they got those hot air balloons out, I was pumped.
I was even more pumped.
Like, that was just, like, if you're going to make an action movie like this, it needs to be off the rail. People dying on really shoddily made hot air balloons was perfect. And then after that, it was just a disaster. I didn't care anymore.
I wouldn't disagree that the stuff inside the city is less than, no question.
Honestly, like, as we talk about this and I think about it, the monsters getting to this and eating everyone and everything would have been a much better ending.
Oh, like the movie ends on a sour note.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Everyone's dead. Yeah, that would have been, it certainly would have been off the theme of China is awesome and resilient and going to conquer the world one day. But
true.
Yeah, that would have been a ballsy move. I don't want to paint Zhang Yimou as like a propagandist. He did make a movie about like the aftermath of the Cultural Revolution in like Mao Zedong China that frankly I'm shocked was able to get made in China. Like, it was pretty aggressively finger pointing. He does, I think, have a clear-eyed view of his country's history, even if I mean, he did do like the Beijing opening Olympics ceremony, which, you know, I'm sure was impressive as hell. But that was a propagandistic exercise.
I mean, it's kind of like how we're forced to do, you know, really good things under your dictatorship. In our
name
club.
One.
In our club. Like, sometimes we show up for podcasts.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We're here morning for you.
Okay.
Just yell dance monkey dance to Brian.
Sure. I believe.
Dance, bear dance.
I believe that if the dinosaur monsters invaded my capital and I hid behind my emperor chair, you would all hike up your magnets and save my life.
We would.
Okay, I appreciate that. The final movie in our 2017 catch-up trio is Megan Levy. Certainly the smallest and least successful of the three. I don't think
so bad.
I don't think it cost very much, and I don't think it earned very much. So maybe it all worked out. But this is directed by Gabriel Copperthwaite. And it is about a real-life bomb-sniffing dog soldier and his handler. It's one of these, like, small-scale biopics about average people encountering circumstances that are anything but. Megan Levy isn't a particularly distinguished soldier. She isn't a particularly interesting person. And her exploits aren't particularly noteworthy. But, I don't know, this film is, like, somewhat about how easy it is to just lean into that averageness, that mediocrity, if that's something we know very much about. Concede, defeat, accept it, and just be numb after loss or trauma. Those kind of low stakes, however, when what the viewer is essentially rooting for is an average person to sidle up to the bar of above average, they don't necessarily make for the highest level of momentum in a film, as Copperthwaite pretty passively moves Megan between conflicts and problems. therefore making this a hard film to like. I think I was the most positive on it, and I gave it a C.
A more interesting film would be watching a biopic about me watching this movie and still waking up. Why did I wake up this morning? This film still exists.
Is it as bad as all that? Yes. Is it not just a meh movie?
It's a brutally bad movie.
It's bad. I was looking through CineSif tonight, and it got actually good reviews from critics. I'm not sure what movie they were watching.
I don't know.
It's nuts.
John said it on Facebook. People like soldiers and they like dogs.
Critics like those things. I think movie critics are resistant to like soldier prop-up movies. Things like 12 Strong that just came out this weekend. Like, it doesn't automatically get rave reviews just because it's about soldiers. Like, there's one critic, Amy Nicholson, who runs a movie podcast I listen to called The Canon. She gave a terrible review to Lone Survivor. And like people came after her.
Yeah.
Like she was a subject on Fox News for like days. Movie critic gives guy that we have on our shows all the time a bad review about his life. It's a little more complicated, I'm sure, than, and I haven't read like all these reviews about Megan Levy. I've read a couple in the aftermath of putting my own review up. But it's just, it's inoffensive. It's very low-key. It doesn't insist on drama that doesn't necessarily exist. It withholds drama that I think more manipulative movies would engage in. I think the question is, like, is this story so worth telling in the first place? And I think you guys would maybe answer no.
I would answer yes. There's probably something interesting here. But, like, these bring up multiple problems and multiple emotional issues. And then there's, like, she did a petition.
I mean, the big conflict is like going to Iraq and navigating all that shit there. But that ends and there's like 45 minutes left in the movie. And it does become a battle with bureaucracy.
Right.
Past
so,
a certain point. And that's just never going to kind of.
It does. It becomes a battle with common sense. Shouldn't have a war trained animal around people and children. Because Common, who's usually a fine actor who's awful in this because it's a shit movie.
He's not given a lot to do, certainly.
He's
like the most clear-headed person, I think, in the movie. And I think the movie would have done well to demonstrate how unsuited to regular life these dogs are. It doesn't, and they don't.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the real story is that she had this dog for, like, 6 to 8 months after he was retired. And maybe because the dog was old and dying, it wasn't a problem. But if she had got him when she wanted him, or like a year or two earlier and spent all that time, like when the dog is healthier, who knows? Yeah, maybe he would have bit some kid's face off.
Yeah.
It's a good and reasonable argument as to why maybe this isn't a good idea. But this is a movie that is directed by, as I mentioned, Gabriella Cowperthwaite, whose previous credit is Shane Settner's favorite, Blackfish.
Oh my God.
So when it comes to...
I had no idea.
So when it comes to portraying the potential viciousness of animals, I don't know that she is maybe the best advocate of such.
This makes so much sense. That's why The Veterinarian is such a shittily written and...
Oh yeah, just needlessly, really needlessly cruel.
But accurate. Fucking accurate. God damn it. Fuck you, Gabriella Cowperthwaite.
Cowperthwaite.
Fuck you. I don't even want to say your name right. You fucking suck. You're such a fucking hack. Those are two terrible movies that are just fucking manipulative. Oh.
To Miss Cowperthwaite's credit, she does not show the death of Rex.
Oh.
You don't think I do think that is a creditable decision. It would have been so easy. So easy. I'm sure I haven't seen Marley and Me, but I have no doubt that they spent a lot of time with that dog dying in that movie.
About a fucking dog when people are coming home from war and have severe PTSD and are super depressed.
Yes.
And you make the fucking story about a fucking dog.
Megan, who does come back with PTSD, and the movie really skirts over that.
Under the rug. Fuck you. This is an offensive movie. This is an F.
Shit.
Maybe I'm letting the Blackfish angle cloud my mind a little bit because I was at a D.
I do think they're tangentially related. Like a dog is turned into a dangerous animal. and then it tries to reintegrate into society. But I mean, everything is fine in the case of Megan Levy, but there are certainly problems. Those whales are, contributed to deaths at SeaWorld. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've seen Blackfish. I don't remember exactly how it came down with some of those instances.
Whale psychosis.
Whale psychosis, sure. Here or there.
Brian, I'm sorry. We're talking.
You're ranting at this point.
Sorry. I'm just emotional
going
about this.
On and on.
If the movie doesn't necessarily inspire a lot of admiration and praise, I don't know that it inspires that level of animosity and hatred towards it. I do still think it's just a very broad, crowd-pleasing, unoffensive movie.
I would agree with that. So in my review, I brought up 7 things that this movie could have been about, that it whiffs on every single one of them. It's almost like it's obnoxiously bad that they whiff on all of these things. So the main character has a dead best friend, and they just glance over that. Her mother is traumatizing in how she treats her daughter. Glance over that. Females in the military. Glance over that. Females in a hyper-specific branch of the military, like something new. Glance over that. The bonding with the dog, I don't think it ever happened, even though it's a movie
about it. I had no sense of that. I did read an article from a military-based website about this movie and comparing it to real life. And this is a movie. It doesn't have to be accurate 100% in any way. But apparently the real Rex was nowhere near as standoffish as the Rex in this movie. And if that is true, and if the movie is going to make that change, I mean, really dive into it. Like, lean into that.
They spent the first 30 minutes of the movie as one giant training montage, and they could have spent that time just get her in and bond with the dog and figure that out so we have some sort of emotional connection.
I mean, something you left off that list, too, is that they...
Well, my list goes...
Oh, okay. I've got
3 more. It's actually 8. I miscounted. So they miss bonding with the dog. She goes to war, and it's, like, not a big deal. The person and the dog face hard times. This is the PTSD and dealing with the vet. And then they've got person and dog face off against the military bureaucracy. And they never dive into any of it. It's just this broad stroke. It's all whiffs. It was so bad.
It's all things that happen.
No.
Instead of things
she signed petitions, it solved everything.
The act of her calling Chuck Schumer and getting them to release the dog to her is the least interesting part of things that are somewhat interesting.
Of a largely uninteresting movie with...
I wouldn't necessarily argue with that.
Here's why it's so bad. Is Brian just listed off his list of things that they could have approached or they could have dove into, and they just fucking ignore all of it.
Yeah. It's unclear in the movie exactly when she signed up for the military, and I think this is like the most important thing that the movie skirts over, is like, why does she do this? Why did she sign up for the military? I thought if it was pre-9/11, then that was probably a thing that people did in like a peacetime world where you think you're just going to go to like Berlin and hang out there for like 6 months and then rotate back to the United States. But to sign up willy-nilly after 9/11, when you're almost certain you're going to go to war, that is a decision that just... It's more than just walking into a storefront recruiting office and then showing up at Paris Island to train to be a Marine.
Well, like, that's still not even the most egregious. That's annoying as shit. But I don't know. There's a lot that fucking bothers me about this movie. The scene where there's like, we don't let girls go on missions. Ugh, yuck. And then all of a sudden, they're like, oh, we need you to go on this mission. But I didn't think you let girls go on the mission. Oh, well, okay, you're going now. And that was it.
See, I'll stick up for that omission because
the
rule is dumb and the military didn't plan enough to get enough bomb-sniffing dogs out to this area.
How much of a rule was it?
So it's all ill thought out. This movie does not take a political stance overtly in any way.
There's no way.
There's no sense of how she feels about her mission or how the mission is going in Iraq. But I think in instances like that, it's at least demonstrating that nobody knows what the fuck they're doing. This is a vast operation with rules don't make any sense.
No pushback that can be flouted at any moment. Anybody who's a dick to the people who live there. There's no pushback to anything. The whole lesson of this is that animals are just naturally better than humans. They make us fucking better. Fuck that.
Someone's
got
to sniff those bombs out. It's not going to be Private Gomer Pyle
on
a leash.
Those dogs is in companionships to thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars
workers.
We invest in each one of them.
Well, they are workers. They are doing important work.
But they fucking even fuck that because, like, this is a puppy.
Shane, I don't even know what you're talking about anymore.
Yeah, we've lost the thread. You're getting too.
These are beasts of burden, and this movie distills it down to them being puppies and humans.
Well,
they're basically humans.
A cow is not an ox. A dog is not an ox.
They are in this situation.
They're not. They are.
They're trained specialists. They're more like a weapon that we love.
Yeah. They're beasts of burden.
They're. You can't discount millennia of co-evolution, no matter the working relationship.
So are we going to stop eating pigs? What are we doing here?
Unless you're looking for truffles, pigs are arguably smarter than dogs, but we don't live side by side with them.
Don't we?
No.
Some people do that with pigs.
Some people do that with pigs, yes, but not enough.
Some people do that with everything.
Yeah.
So
there's no bomb sniffing iguana, but people have iguanas instead.
Are we just gonna see who can come up with the funniest bomb sniffing animal?
I mean, I put my nickel down.
Oh, there's no bomb sniffing walrus, but
yeah, but see the difference here, Brian, is that no one actually has a walrus as a pet.
Yeah.
Like that's
somebody
that's
does.
That's where you lost.
Somebody has to.
Nanook of the North might be really close with his pet walrus, but
man, this is a bad movie. It's a bad movie. That's it.
I think it.
She's a shitty director.
I think it gets
manipulative.
I think it gets the moments that it needs to get right. Right.
No, they do not. They get none of the moments in the year.
I think the combat is cohesive.
The combat was adequate. It wasn't distractingly bad. That was the only good, not the combat is good, but it was the only well done part of the movie.
Right.
Or okay,
it's the only procedurally interesting part of the movie.
When they were,
I have no sense of how they train the dogs after. I do have a sense of how to navigate of a deteriorating firefight.
That was really
you put the little flags in. It's always little things like that. That was good. Yeah. That was learning experience.
But it was just such a sliver of, and that's the problem with this movie. It's a sliver of everything. It brings up a bunch of shit.
It's half measures.
Yeah. It's someone who's dumb enough to have written and directed Blackfish. Which is a stupid
It's a lazy
movie.
Yeah.
Which if I can fucking break that movie down and I'm a goddamn moron, the movie sucks. The movie fucking sucks. Both your movies suck.
The dangling thread that I thought was most silly, as long as we're shitting on Megan Levy, movie that I just don't feel strongly enough to shit on that much. That's just me, though. I feel your disappointment. I get it.
My question is, if you had never told Shane who the director of this movie was,
it'd still
would
be
he
a D plus.
Right, I know.
I would have felt bad because I would have been like, this is someone who obviously just doesn't want to make a good movie doing Hallmark stuff. But this is someone who continuously makes bad movies.
I think it's a better directing movie than
it's writing this because I was like, it was successful because you. People are fucking
in the sense of it's agitprop and it wants to turn people against SeaWorld, which it did.
Yes.
Anyways, the thing that I thought was silliest in Megan Levy is its attempt to depict her as a fuck up in the military. She just drinks a lot and like pees on a building. I don't know. Whenever movies try and convey the seriousness of a situation, I think that's really dangerous territory if you can't get the viewer to get on that same level just because you become like a snarky teenager in that instance. And that's just like a really bad place.
Name one interesting character in this movie.
Yeah, I can't. I think her parents are well portrayed, but that's because they're well cast by Edie Falco and Bradley Whitford. I don't think there's anything
actually, her dad
inherently
is
well written.
Interesting. He actually had some stuff to say.
Like Edie Falco, who is a goddamn national treasure.
Wasted, this movie.
Wasted, yes. But she framed him as a jerk, and then we see that he's not a jerk. Yeah, like she was obviously the shitty person in the relationship.
If she sucked so bad, why was she at Yankee Stadium?
This was actually a big part of the movie Stronger, another average person thrust into extraordinary circumstances type movie. It's about a guy who got his legs blown off in the Boston Marathon bombing. For a good chunk of that movie, he's going through the motions as like an inspirational figure, like an unwilling inspirational figure. And his family is very much dining out on all of the perks that he is getting. They get to sit in skyboxes for Boston Bruins games because he's like throwing, I don't know, what the equivalent of tossing the first pitch, whatever it is for a hockey game.
Slipping on ice.
Sure.
You morons, dropping the puck.
I know, Brian.
Dropping the puck means like the game has started.
Well, they do like an honorary.
There isn't a guy.
That's like baseball. In baseball, when you throw the pitch, that's how the game starts.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Is that actually a thing in hockey? Like someone,
yes,
drops the puck on the ice.
You actually don't slip on the ice. They have a carpet that goes all the way.
Yes,
he did that. He rolled it on a carpet and like waved. I didn't see him drop a puck or anything. That seems really silly. Like throwing a first pitch.
What part of sports really is high
there?
Yeah,
it's because you can fuck it up so easy. You're just dropping a thing on
a
thing.
What would you do for NBA?
You're really relying on gravity to work
tip,
in that moment.
You throw a tip off to nobody.
That's why basketball is a better sport than all that shit. Like there isn't that kind of thing.
In football, you get the first.
There are mascots jumping off of trampolines and dunking the ball. Sure, but there isn't this dumbass pregame ritual.
I'm glad Brian appreciated my concussion jokes.
Okay, there's no.
I love concussion jokes. If you wanted me to watch football again for like the first minute, if you actually like had the average person try to kick a football off a tee, that would be great. Cause that's not that easy.
I have no doubt.
I would absolutely watch that.
Hardcore football fans be volunteered to get hit in the helmet, the helmet first. All the ones on Twitter, like, this pussy
bring the kickoff back.
Yeah, it's a no fun league. Man, I don't hit anybody anymore. Those guys just be able to volunteer.
I demand tau protein in my linebacker's brains.
Yeah. I'd watch that.
Tau protein causes Alzheimer's, by the way.
Yeah.
So the theme for this round is pretty vague. And again, I slanted this particular trio that we ended up selecting towards mediocrity and averageness. And again, didn't work because I misjudged my audience. So, sticking with wide-release movies that I might have subbed in to this trio, perhaps even like big blockbustery movies, of which The Great Wall certainly was, but Split and Megan Levy were absolutely not. I feel like combined they cost like $20 million.
I actually wanted to watch The Great Wall. I'm like, there's no way it could be that bad. And I was wrong.
You're crazy. C+. So, what would you have preferred to be on the list? Like, what's a movie at this point? Totally reasonable. Yeah.
I like that. We should have gone, evidently, according to the Oscars people, we should have gone with Boss Baby.
Yeah, what?
That is disgraceful. That is disgraceful. That'll do us for this episode of the podcast. We got a lot of mileage out of these three movies, surprisingly. We managed to solve our Juggalo problem and or create, I mean, how many subcultures can we alienate in any given year? Like, we're podcasting pretty regularly. And if you believe strongly about anything weird that we determine to be weird, namely alternative medicine or juggalos, rap bands that probably shouldn't exist, we're coming to the state of Alabama.
Did you say rap bands?
What else would you call the insane clown posse?
Rap group.
Rap. That's disrespectful to like Bone Thugs and Harmony. You're gonna put Bone Thugs and Harmony and the insane clown posse in the same broad umbrella?
Hey, yeah, I guess rap bands fits. I've just never heard that phrase before. I like that. That's what you say about people who are faux rappers.
Yeah. Rap bands. It sounds like lap bands, yeah, which is something Juggalos probably could use.
Yeah.
Just a thimbleful of Faygo for me, sir.
I'm pretty sure this is not the first time that we've attacked Juggalos, so...
I don't know. I mean, they're...
Thankfully...
Low-hanging fruit.
MMC Studios is surrounded by maggots, so we're fine.
They run up on us angry and ready to strike with, I don't know, boards with nails sticking out of them. I don't know what the standard Juggalo implement is.
But by the time...
they pass that magnetic field, and then it's and like, just, why am I carrying this board?
Oh,
let me... How's my 401k doing?
Let me fix this person's fence with this board.
Quotidian concerns once they pass those magnets. How do they work?
Are the magnets strong enough to pull the boards out of their hands? The nails.
Well, the nails from the boards. Jeez, from
quit
their
being
hands.
So fucking stupid, Brian. Jeez,
we're talking
upset.
About a fictional.
This is a real situation. Does the magnet pull the boards from their hands? Come on.
I'm asking how strong your magnets are.
Come on. Now you're just making fun of us.
It just seems to be a square rock if the Great Wall is any indication. So our next trio of movies is built around the theme of women in men's worlds. The three movies that we've selected are Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, available on Amazon Prime, The Silence of the Lambs, I believe is available on Netflix, and Big Eyes, which is also available on Netflix. We'll be rolling out reviews of those over the next 3 weeks. Followed by another podcast in which we discuss each individual movie and that singular theme. Check us out on the internet at MunichMovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Munich Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Munich Movical. If you're shopping on Amazon for a screwdriver kit that maybe you're trying to replace after it got stolen out of the garage. Or something that can pull dents out of the front of your car because you smashed into a construction van, a ridiculous parking lot at one of these stupid Chinese restaurants in Atlanta
that serve chicken
that don't actually serve Chinese food. Why is it so hard to find good Chinese food in Atlanta? Why do I have to fuck my bumper up to find something reasonable? But if you're looking for those kind of things, and you click on the link on our MediaCommunity.club page. And you shop normally, we get a handful of percent of your purchase, even though it costs you nothing to make that donation. And iTunes reviews help us reach more people.
Yeah, we'll read that shit.
We will 100% read that shit, even though before this podcast and before the previous one that we recorded the day before, I haven't checked to see if there are new reviews.
We didn't say when we'd read it.
I mean, do you want to know how to disarm a juggalo with a charging at you with a board and a nail coming out of it? Are you Tila Tequila and you're thinking to yourself, I could have saved myself a lot of trauma if I just waved a refrigerator magnet around? Subscribing to this podcast could save your life.
Yeah.
Okay? I've never been more serious about anything. If you don't want to be annihilated by someone that has poor taste in music and friends, then this is what listening and subscribing and supporting the Media Community Club podcast will get you: a brief respite and continued existence. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
John.
Have a good night.